I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In the next hour, we're talking about farming and the policies that affect producers across the state. John Adams is president of the newly created Wisconsin Farmers Union chapter for Ashland and Bayfield counties. Bayfield's Mary Doherty is a member of the chapter's board. The two spoke with me by phone recently about forming a farmers union chapter for the area and how they hope to influence farm policy for the region.
The chapter formed July 26th, roughly, at my farm, and that just put officers in place, nominated by the group of people that showed up and the people that joined Farmers Union at that point. So we had our first meeting a couple weeks ago with the board and the officers. I was introduced to the Farmers Union through their lobbying trip they do every year to Washington, D.C. They make it pretty easy for people to go along and talk to legislators.
Okay. Well, why do you think it's important that this chapter has formed in northern Wisconsin?
Well, it seemed like it just obviously needed to happen here. There's chapters throughout the state and throughout the country, and we have our own unique brand of politics in northern Wisconsin, and Douglas County has a chapter, but other than that, northern Wisconsin isn't very well represented in Farmers Union. And our unique geography around the bay and the small farms that this landscape requires fit really well with Farmers Union. And it just seemed like we needed to get organized and come together so we could promote our brand of politics and promote what kind of farming we do up here, and promote the kind of environment that we try to protect up here when we do farm. So I think all those things kind of mesh well with the Farmers Union, and there was really no reason not to have one. And I think a lot of people got excited and interested as soon as they had the opportunity to join.
And so I guess, you know, are you in the process now of setting goals of what you'd like to accomplish in the area for farmers?
Yeah, for our chapter, each chapter has the opportunity to send delegates to a state convention to argue for their specific chapter's policies, which is a great example of a grassroots democracy in an organization. So by roughly the end of the year, we come up with those policies, and then for every 10 members you have in your chapter, you get an extra voice at the delegate convention. So up until then, we'll be coming up with these policies and trying to influence state and federal policy. And then as the new year begins, we'll be arguing for those policies in Madison and Washington, D.C. So Farmers Union does a great job of amplifying those voices to enable rural people the opportunity to speak with legislators and see how the process works.
Okay. And Mary, you've been an outspoken advocate for small farms, family farms, and have pointed out some of the issues that can exist with large farms like concentrated animal feeding operations. What is it about the northern Wisconsin area, you know, the Ashland and Bayfield county region, that makes farming there so unique in your mind?
Well, I need to kind of dial that. I mean, when I first started getting involved with factory farming, I did, we go towards the small family farmer. And what I've realized is there is the face of the family farmer is really diverse across Wisconsin. And there are larger family farmers, not necessarily the industrial scale 6,000 head farms, but there are, you know, family farms that are doing it on a medium size scale. You know, they maybe have 600-800 cows that are doing it right. And that I think that because I the reason why when I first started dealing with Dale Reichs and all of those hogs that he wanted to bring up from here from Iowa, my experience with farming and the farmers in this region were small family farmers, you know, maybe dairy herd of anywhere from 50 to maybe 200 at the most. And so I think what makes our area unique is that it is a small family farmer. We don't have row crops. We don't have, you know, massive silage piles. We don't have the kind of larger scale ag that we see downstate up here. And that's due in large part to our unique climate that we have. We're really far north, and that presents challenges as well as advantages, especially as the climate continues to change.
Okay. So I guess how does that tie into some of the policies that are being created then as part of the formation of this chapter? I mean, either John or Mary, whoever wants to jump in on that.
I do want to add something to what John said, is that Wisconsin Farmers Union, absolutely, farming is a huge part of their goal, their mission. But when you look at their mission statement, it makes mention of rural communities. It says they enhance the quality of life for family farmers, rural communities, and all people through educational opportunities, cooperative endeavors, and civic engagement. And for me, that says it all. Because as I've traveled around the state and I live up here in an area that had to deal with the CAFO, what I've figured out is one thing very important is that we don't create vibrant rural spaces. We don't create family farmers that are safe from the vagaries of market influences and consolidation by fighting the corporate agriculture model. We do that by keeping our communities vibrant and innovative and resilient by, you know, looking simply, we don't keep factory farms out by fighting against them. We keep them out by bolstering our local communities so they're strong enough not to need them. And that's what I think the Wisconsin Farmers Union is going to be a really important partner for us in making sure that northern Wisconsin is vibrant and resilient so we don't have to look to economic development in the form of industrial scale agriculture.
So, John, is this the formation of the chapter then a way or a place to have these conversations about agriculture, not just with farmers, but the entire community?
Yeah, absolutely. The vision is to have a robust conversation among residents in rural areas. It's not necessarily just for farmers. And keeping in mind the influencing factor that farms have on a rural landscape, but a lot of the policies the Farmers Union advocates for are for rural life and not necessarily just to protect farmers. So things like groundwater protections are not for farmers, they're for people who live around farms. So ideally, we have a potluck party once a month and we get together and have fun and get organized. And I just think that's something that is lacking in rural America as our political parties have consolidated to metropolitan areas. The money has consolidated to metropolitan areas. And there's less hope in rural America now than there's been, I don't know since when, but it seems like the more we talk about things and the more we get organized, maybe we can salvage some political power.
Yeah, I think John just hit it on the head. It's about organizing. If you take a look at their 2018 policy book, which is on their website, wisconsinfarmersunion.org, their policies run the gamut, everything from community solar to gender minority equality, to local regional food systems, to single-payer health care, to what to do about roads. I mean, it's probably one of the most comprehensive policy documents that I've seen that really kind of takes a deep dive into what rural communities need to have to be resilient, to be able to weather, you know, like I said, tariffs and political issues and consolidation. I mean, we need to get our rural communities strong and rooted in place. And what John said about organizing, in my opinion, is absolutely key. And that's what I feel this Wisconsin Farmers Union chapter is going to help. It's going to provide a space for that for us in northern Wisconsin.
So, Mary, are the policies that you or that you just mentioned, you know, touching on things like solar, single payer, et cetera, you know, is that all developed for the local area for the chapter that is formed, or is that overall as the Wisconsin Farmers Union?
That's the overall Wisconsin Farmers Union. But what John mentioned earlier in our conversation, that each one of these chapters brings their ideas down into the statewide convention, and we kind of hash it out collectively. And if that isn't what democracy should look like, if that isn't what grassroots organizing can bring to life, which is bringing our values, our policies into a larger context where we can leverage our individual ideas, but bring them up and amplify them through a statewide organization and then ultimately through a national organization. That's why I'm so excited about the Wisconsin Farmers Union, because that conduit for the grassroots up to the national level is there.
And so, John, what do you see as some of the top priorities that you want to work on for policy for farmers in rural America as it pertains to this chapter?
Well, one of the things is dairy policy. I think if, as members of the Farmers Union, we simply have a responsibility to try to do something for the dairy industry right now, because they're struggling so hard. So one of the projects Farmers Union is doing right now is called Rural Voices, and it's trying to put farmers, and rural people online in video and letters to the editor to just amplify our voice about what it's like in rural America right now, and hopefully influence the farm bill and the midterm elections. So that's, I think that's an important project that Farmers Union is doing that no one else is doing, with simply boots on the ground, talking about things like supply management from Canada, taking tours to the Northeast to talk about supply management, holding forums throughout Wisconsin for the same thing. As Mary said, we don't have as many dairy farms up here, but the ones we do have are
important members of our community.
Yeah. So there's projects like that that I'd like to see implemented up here. And really, we haven't hashed out what kind of policies we're going to have. That's really coming up at our next meeting, actually. I mean, Mary and I have been in quite a bit of discussion about things, but we also need to hear from our board members, our officers, and then our members. And so we're going to be taking those ideas and those voices together and coming up with that at our next month meeting.
So, you know, you mentioned dairy policy, John, and, you know, we've seen more and more farms just getting out of the business, or, you know, whether it's because of retiring farmers or the state of things right now. What do you see as some of the top challenges for the dairy industry in Wisconsin?
I think that they're maybe looking for a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, or some sort of answer to the current crisis, and one does not seem to be evident. And so now is the time to propose new ideas. And I think what Farmers Union is doing is proposing a supply management system from Canada. And obviously that's a pretty big change to the produce model of U.S. agriculture. And so it requires people to have a little more confidence in democracy than I think is the typical attitude in rural America right now, and maybe America in general. But I think there's a particular anger with where things are at politically in this country. And so something like supply management is going to require people to have faith in the government controlling how much milk is produced. So, and I don't think that faith is there right now because there's such a lack of trust and communication between our politicians and our rural areas. I mean, politicians don't go to rural areas anymore. They let talk radio take care of their messaging for them, and if they show up, they show up briefly and without much warning. And so people are angry, and so I think part of what Farmers Union is doing is restoring that faith, and that happens through simply coming together and talking with people. So,
well, yeah. And it seems like, you know, over the years, as the dairy industry has changed, or just agriculture in general, that, you know, everything has had to get bigger to make the same amount of money to make a living as they once did. And with that has come all sorts of challenges, you know, whether that's, you know, a glut of milk on the market, or, you know, what you mentioned before with concerns about water quality. As you have to grow your herd to produce more milk to make a living these days, then you're dealing with more waste, and that waste doesn't always end up in places we want it to.
Right. There's a disconnect between these farms getting so massive and what to do with all the waste. And the growth policy of organizations like the Farm Bureau, and even Extension, University Extension, has been promoting production and science forever. And it hasn't been taking into account what it does to rural landscapes and rural lives. And so I'm pretty excited about Wisconsin Farmers Union new director, Julie Kiln-Bomar, who comes out of Extension, but she has a really interesting background, a diverse background, and she understands what rural organizing is all about. And for a Farmers Union organization to hire someone with as diverse a background as her, and puts a face on the organization that it's about organizing, I think, and it's not about science or production or marketing for an answer for what's going on with dairy policy and in rural America in general.
Well, and Mary, you know, as these changes are taking place, I think you have found out firsthand the kind of attitudes that can exist as these stresses are unfolding for agriculture and the communities that they live in. You know, it seems like there is a lot of butting of heads or conflict, or people feeling like they're under attack, whether they just want to protect their water or whether they just want to make a living. Mm-hmm. So how do you have these conversations then? You know, how do you bring people together and talk about issues when they may feel like they're already on the defensive?
That is a really good question, let me tell you. And it's two ways that I found to be relatively effective. One is when I travel around to your, because you actually nailed it on the head. I mean, I deal with folks who are upset that they're manure trucks are driving by, or they're concerned about their well water, or their water is polluted like it is down in the Central Sands in Armenia. And then we've got the industry folks who are like, man, this is what we've been told what to do. We've been told Walker's 30 by 20, that big initiative to get, you know, billions of gallons of milk by 2020, which they surpassed, I think, in 2017. I got to check that. But so you've got this dichotomy, right? This perfect storm of entrenched ideologies fighting against each other. And before we start talking about solutions, I think we need to talk about who we are in Wisconsin, who we are in rural communities. And I challenge everyone that comes to this, this table, so to speak, to answer three questions. Who are you? What do you value? And then what are you going to do about it? And we have to talk about who are we and what do we value before we even get to what are we going to do about it. And the current scheme is what we're going to tell you what to do about it. And there's nothing that makes, well, people in general, but rural people in particular, irritated is having someone come in and saying, this is what you're going to do. And so how do we answer questions 1 and 2? Who are we and what do we value? And you know me, I tend to filter everything through dogs and food. And for me, I think the table is the absolutely perfect spot for these tough conversations. I think we need the table now more than we've ever needed it. And that's one of the other reasons why I really like Farmers Union is their organizing or their meetings are typically centered around potlucks, gathering, hanging out, community. You're not sitting in a room looking at a PowerPoint. You're sharing a meal with somebody. And I think that that is, when we're in that space, when we are digging deeper into what we mean when we say local food or sustainable or small family farmers, what that stuff means is, what we're really saying is, it's about connections, about sharing meals with people, about the home that we know, that's the place where we, you know, open the door and go in every night to do the laundry or turn on the tap or whatever that means, that it can be boiled down into all food comes from some place and that place is someone's home. So we're not really talking about factory farms. We're not really talking about what happens when your well gets polluted. We're really talking about these are people's homes, and that's a cornerstone American value. And the Wisconsin Farmers Union, again, helps rural communities organize around those cornerstone values that each community, each chapter can define for themselves. And that's what we're, I think John and I are in agreement on this. I think we should have lots of potlucks, lots of dinners, lots of gatherings that have really nothing, there's no agenda. It's just, let's try to noodle our way through this stuff because it's complicated. But I know that if we are all talking together, we'll come up with some solution that works.
So break bread and break down the issues.
Exactly, because what else are we going to do? There's really, at this point, it's so easy to sit in your camp and lob, you know, bombs at each other. But wouldn't it be better just to sit around and eat a really great meatball? You know, don't throw food, put it in your mouth. And I think that is something that's missing.
So, John, you know, Mary's talking about tough conversations. What do you think those conversations are that need to be had then for Northern Wisconsin as it relates to farming and the community?
I think there's obviously farms that are expanding and growing to keep up with an economy. It's not as big as a pressure as other parts of the state. I think there's going to be more common ground up here. Just because we live in a beautiful area that I think everybody wants to protect. And I know that gets more difficult, much more difficult, when your income is directly tied to the land and the bottom, whether you stay in business or not. Things like protecting groundwater becomes much more dicey. But I don't think it's going to be, and maybe I'm being naive, as divisive as it could be in other parts of the state. I think there's a lot of people who want to figure these things out because of the unique geography of where we live. So, but the conversations are, you know, there's so much happening besides farming here. Things like Second Circuit Power Line on the Bayfield County, running gas lines underneath the ground, solar power. It's in rural America, it's like you are suddenly besieged with every type of demand on your land as soon as you move here or grow up here. So the issues aren't necessarily going to be, you know, farmers versus this or farmers versus that. I think it's going to be more like rural America against corporate behemoths. So,
yeah, like rural broadband.
Yeah,
we need rural broadband up here because that's going to help us have economic development that creates resilient community. It's trying to figure out what to do about roads when, you know, the state isn't providing the funding. And how do we fix the roads up here? Do we turn everything back to gravel? I agree with John. I think it's more for us in northern Wisconsin because we don't have that entrenched agricultural flavor, so to speak, with a little bit more diversified up here. I think the Farmers Union, because when you look at their policy book, you see there, I mean, most of everything I look through that book, I'm like, yes, yes, this is stuff that would really help, you know, all of us living on the shores of Lake Superior trying to figure out how do we protect Lake Superior, but how do we also make sure that the folks living along Lake Superior have access to living wage jobs and decent health care and, you know, accessibility with rural broadband, and we can drive on our roads without busting our, you know, axles, that kind of stuff.
So basically, you know, just what you want to see for the vision for the region and how that ties into the land in a lot of ways, whether it's for agriculture or demand for development, things like that.
Yeah, it's hard to predict what kind of conversations we're going to be having or who's going to be at the table, but I think it's going to be more generalized than necessarily farm policies. I think there's definitely going to be some farm policies, but there's all kinds of issues going on that need to be addressed that aren't being addressed in rural America, and people aren't organized around them. So the more conversations we have, I think the better, and hopefully we can facilitate those.
Well, it sounds like the conversations are ongoing about how the area wants to go about farming and agriculture and how that all ties into community. But is there a vision or is there an idea that you would like to see for agriculture in the region or for farmers in the area?
Well, I think the improvement in a farm economy is the only way you're going to keep farmers in business. And there's certainly been good marketing ideas, and our extension agent has been terrific in that regard in bringing more ideas to the table and more marketing so small farms can survive up here, things like Bayfield Foods or more consumer-oriented marketing like Apple Fest. The promotion that the Bayfield Chamber does for fruit farms up here has been spectacular and kept a lot of those farms on the landscape. So I think we have a lot of good ideas up here. There's a lot of people who care about farming up here and care about the quality of the food they're eating and care about the environment and their standard of living. So I think we have a pretty good start, and how to protect that is and fortify that is a direction we could go. But like I said, I'm only one person, and we haven't hammered out that vision or that policy so far. But we've certainly talked about things like including the tribes in the title of our chapter because they're an important part of our community. And Northland College has been a huge supporter of local food economy. And so we have a board member from Northland College, and we've talked about the possibility of having a college chapter even. So there's a lot of great ingredients, and I think we just need to keep those going and strengthen those.
Yeah, and I think the organizing framework that Wisconsin Farmers Union will bring to those great ingredients are going to result in some really good strategic conversations about, we've got all this cool stuff going on. How do we put it together in a way that can create meaningful change for northern Wisconsin, that can create meaningful seen that to be meaningful because they can, you know, kind of bolster what we've done so far. Because there has been a tremendous amount of work done before this Wisconsin Farmers Union chapter showed up. But what I'm hoping is that this, the chapter will provide us kind of a framework for putting it together in a way that we can bring down to other parts of the state and say, this is what we're doing. What are you all doing? Let's figure out how we can collectively work together to, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats thing.
Again, you were just listening to John Adams, who runs Yeoman Farm in Washburn, and Bayfield's Mary Doherty. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. Just before the break, we heard from John Adams and Mary Doherty about the recently formed Farmers Union chapter for Ashland and Bayfield counties. Up next, we hear from Bobby Wilson. She's a government relations associate for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Wilson talks about some of the top priorities they're working on for farmers statewide.
I would say the number one issue that we're focusing on right now is dairy policy reform. So I'm sure it's no surprise to anyone in Wisconsin that family dairy farms are really important to Wisconsin's heritage. But unfortunately, right now, we're losing a record number of family farms every year. About 500 family farms are going out of business each year in Wisconsin. And this is because we're just overproducing milk and flooding the market, which is keeping the milk price very low. And some of the larger dairies are in a position to outcompete the family farms that are going out of business. So we have formed this Dairy Together movement that's pushing for policy solutions such as a federal supply management program that would reverse that trend and help keep our family dairy farmers on the land.
Tell me a little bit about the movement and what it would do then.
Sure. So this movement started with a series of educational events that we had back in March about the Canadian supply management system. And we intended for this to just be an educational set of meetings. But following the meetings, we had a number of members and people outside of our organization who were really inspired by what they learned. And they started to envision dairy policy that worked better than what we have now. And they started approaching us saying, what can we do here in Wisconsin or here in the United States to push for a better system? So Dairy Together was our response to this sort of groundswell of support that we were seeing in the countryside for a system that balances supply with demand and provides a more stable pay price to family farmers. So far, our Dairy Together movement has spread beyond Wisconsin. We now have members participating in Michigan and Missouri and Minnesota, and even as far as California and some of the northeastern states that meet regularly for conference calls and talk about how to push for a better dairy policy.
And so are there ideas that are coming about from that already as to what can be done and how to address what we're seeing right now in the market, you know, with the challenges of the overproduction of milk and also with the foreign policy that we're seeing with tariffs that are making that even more difficult?
Yeah, so the thing that's clear is that we need a federal program and it has to be mandatory and apply to everyone across the board. We recently took a bus trip to Albany, New York for a dairy summit that was hosted by AgriMark Co-op to hear from a number of specific policy proposals that would help balance supply and demand. So right now we are reviewing those proposals and trying to figure out what's going to work best for the United States. At Wisconsin Farmers Union, we're not advocating for a quota system that looks exactly like Canada's, but there were a number of proposals that would go a long way in bringing up that pay price and reducing some of the price volatility that's really hurting farmers because they're not able to plan accordingly for their businesses.
Okay. Well, what are some of the stresses that you see affecting farmers in Wisconsin that is kind of putting them at a disadvantage on the dairy front, you know, policy-wise? Are there things in place that you feel need to be amended?
For state-level policy?
It could be state or federal. I mean, I know there's always a lot of talk about the Farm Bill. So is there anything at the state or federal level that the Farmers Union has been pushing to change because they feel, from a policy standpoint, it's putting dairy farmers at a disadvantage?
Well, I think that right now dairy farmers feel an economic incentive to expand. So the price is low and they are being pressured to get bigger and bigger. But that's, of course, flooding the market even further and sort of keeping dairy farmers on this perpetual treadmill of overproduction. So I think that is the main stressor that we're seeing for dairy farmers.
So you're hoping that this Dairy Together movement will help come up with ideas that will address some of those issues?
Yeah, well, I think there are a number of ideas already out there. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but especially in the lead up to the last farm bill, there were a few different supply management policies that were considered, and none of them made it across the finish line. So what we're doing is revisiting some of those policies and seeing what would dairy prices have been over the last 4 years if some of those programs had been in place, and using that to inform what's going to work best for dairy farmers moving forward.
What do you want people to understand about farming and what we're seeing in Wisconsin right now and how things could be addressed?
I think overall our vision is to have more farmers on the land rather than fewer. So we know that that is more sustainable overall, both environmentally and economically, that having many independently owned family farms rather than just a handful of some of these mega industrial farms that are owned by outside investors, we know that that has a more positive impact on rural communities. These farms are the economic engines of rural communities. So when they go away, the towns go with them. So I think that's really the most important point that I like to stress is that if we want to keep our rural communities alive and thriving, we need to be able to keep these family farms alive and thriving. And right now, dairy farmers in particular are just disappearing at an extremely rapid rate. And that's having a detrimental effect on rural Wisconsin.
And are there other issues or other priorities that you're trying to address, maybe outside of the dairy policy reform?
Yeah, another big policy priority is related to water, in particular, supporting groundwater testing and mapping across the state. Water is a huge issue that affects so many different aspects of our lives, but in particular, people in rural areas that depend on well water, they need to know what's in their water. And I think local communities would also benefit from having these groundwater maps and a comprehensive test of water across the state of Wisconsin to make future planning decisions that could impact water resources.
Do you find that your members feel like they're kind of under the gun a lot related to some of the issues that we've seen with water quality? I mean, it always seems like it's painted that farmers are the source of some of the problems that we're seeing with groundwater or surface water, especially in the northeastern part of the state with Kewaunee County, where we're seeing some impacts from manure making it into rivers and streams. I mean, I guess I'm just wondering, if they feel like they're being painted into a corner, whereas, they also depend upon clean water or, value water quality just like anybody else in their community.
Sure. Yeah, I think there is a public perception that farmers on the whole are contributing to water pollution. But what we see is that smaller family farmers are having a positive impact. A lot of our members that are part of our water committee are farmers, and they're also involved with local producer-led watershed groups, for example, groups that talk about how farmers can benefit the water resources and protect the water resources surrounding their farms. We also have a number of members that sit on county boards or advisory committees for their counties to make recommendations about how to protect their water in their local areas. So I think our members really want to be viewed as part of the solution and a group that is actively working to protect our water and to promote clean and abundant water resources across the state.
What do you feel is the answer moving forward to try and address some of the water quality issues that we're seeing?
I think that we need to, as a state, spend more money on the groundwater testing and mapping so that we have that data to inform any decisions that we make regarding water moving forward. But on the ground level, in the local levels, these producer-led watershed groups are extremely beneficial in educating the public and getting farmers to take the initiative to protect their own water resources and the water resources in their communities. So those two things coupled together could go a long way to making sure that we're cleaning up some of the damage that's already been done to our water resources and making sure that we're not adding to that problem.
Anything else I'm missing that you want to add, Bobby?
We would like to see restored control of livestock siting. So being able to regulate large livestock facilities and CAFOs for local communities to be able to have control over that. So this is also connected to the groundwater mapping and testing issue where, you know, if communities know that they have vulnerable water resources or that they're sitting on karst topography, they have a little bit more power in deciding whether or not they want a large livestock facility in their community or where they want that or how to mitigate the risk that that might pose to their community.
So you're talking about the state statute or rule that presumes that, you know, you have a right to farm so that if an application were to come forward, it would have to be considered at the county or local towns. They wouldn't be able to decide whether that's right for them. You'd like to see them to have that local control again about whether or not it's appropriate to have a farm or certain farms sited in their area.
Exactly, or where those farms should be located or what sort of regulations those CAFOs would have to follow.
Again, you were just listening to Bobby Wilson. She's a government relations associate for the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll review some of the news of the week. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. And now it's time to take a look back on some of the news of the week. The Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa says plans are underway for a cell tower on the tribe's reservation. The tribe hopes it will improve public safety after a Wisconsin woman's family died during a trip to the Apostle Islands. Carrie Muse lost her husband, Eric Fryman, and three young children after their kayak took on water and capsized. The family's calls and texts for help went unanswered for hours because of poor cell coverage. Red Cliff IT Director Theron Rutna says the tribe hopes to build a cell tower within the next 5 years that will cover the northern part of the Apostle Islands on Lake Superior, the reservation, and surrounding towns.
That particular incident, as tragic as it is, brings us all to the forefront of public discourse that we should be here in these areas. We should be covered by infrastructure.
The tribe is working with the First Responder Network Authority and AT&T on the cell tower. FirstNet's Jeffrey King says Congress awarded them $6.5 billion to build a nationwide public safety broadband network.
What it really does is it's improving communications for our emergency response corps across this country. It will allow for more efficient and more safe operations for first responders, and really ultimately lead to safer and more secure communities.
Red Cliff's Rutna says a cell tower on nearby Madeline Island provides little coverage of the reservation. He says the goal is to build a tower on the tribe's ancestral lands by fall of next year.
Critics say Wisconsin may have violated a multi-state agreement covering Great Lakes water diversions in the case of Pleasant Prairie. Newly published findings show the state increased the amount of water diverted to the village from Lake Michigan. The Great Lakes Compact oversees how the lake's water supply is used among eight states, including Wisconsin. Peter Annan is the author of The Great Lakes Water Wars and director of the Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation at Northland College in Ashland. In his updated book, Annan says Wisconsin tripled Pleasant Prairie's diversion to just under 11 million gallons per day in 2010.
That's an increase of 7.49 or 7.5 million gallons per day, which is more than the controversial Foxconn water diversion and almost as much as the Waukesha water diversion, which is also still extremely controversial. And there was no public hearing, no public notification about this increase in the Pleasant Prairie diversion.
Pleasant Prairie Village Administrator Nathan Teal says the increase was made in part due to a state requirement to account for future growth on its water system.
So it doesn't make sense to oversize our system, but then restrict us on the actual water we can utilize in that system. And so having those conversations with the state, we set that bar basically at 10.69.
Pleasant Prairie straddles the border of the Great Lakes Basin and only needs state approval for water diversions. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says it followed state law in approving the increase. The DNR's former water division head thinks the agency misapplied state law and that state statute doesn't mesh with the intent of the compact. An organization that represents states in the Great Lakes region says governments should push harder to protect water quality through use of green infrastructure. A report issued this month by the Great Lakes Commission recommends a number of steps to encourage greater reliance on natural features such as rain gardens, bioswales, green roofs, and street trees. They filter out pollutants, preventing them from reaching streams and rivers that drain into the lakes. They also absorb or slowly release stormwater, helping prevent floods. The report calls for full funding of a federal program that provides loans to communities for clean water projects. It also urges government agencies to include use of green infrastructure among best management practices required for communities seeking permits intended to limit stormwater runoff. A northern Wisconsin race is pitting the Democratic incumbent against a Republican in his first run for state Senate. A Republican businessman from Cable is making a run for the 25th Senate seat during a time when many Democrats feel they're riding the blue wave. The 25th Senate District has been a Democratic stronghold for decades, but more than half the voters in the district cast a ballot for President Donald Trump in the last election. Cable's James Bolin hopes to unseat incumbent Democrat Janet Buley of Mason. The two differ on issues like Foxconn. In a WPR debate, Buley said taxpayer money is being diverted from projects in northern Wisconsin.
Straight to Foxconn and straight to all of the expenses that are related to it being created.
Bolin argued Foxconn would add $51 billion to the state's economic output.
That is definitely, helping the overall economy and helping to make more revenue available for some of these projects.
The two also disagree on funding for Wisconsin roads. Bolin says he's not likely to favor tax hikes to pay for transportation.
Especially gasoline taxes, until I can see, a little bit better what exactly they're looking at in regards to, where the funding is going to go and stuff.
But Senator Buley has said she would be willing to raise revenues to pay for roads.
Unless we get good source of revenue into transportation, we will always have this problem.
The two also discuss their views on sulfide mining, chronic wasting disease, and wolf management. People can hear the debate online at WPR.org/Superior. Crime is on the decline in Superior. The Superior Police Department recently released its annual report for last year. Superior Police Chief Nick Alexander says burglary, theft, and assaults have been trending downward over the last 5 years. He says many of the city's property crimes are related to drug abuse.
Particularly drugs like methamphetamine and heroin that basically are very expensive addictions to have, and therefore a lot of property crime gets committed to fund or fuel somebody's addiction to illegal drugs.
Alexander says one reason crime may be trending down is that they have added more officers.
We have been able to, work more shifts above our minimums. Still not where we'd like to be, but we're definitely making progress, and that's going to continue in 2018 and 2019 as well, where that helps, presence is the number one deterrent for crime.
The department currently has around 60 officers on staff. He says their efforts to improve relations with community members may also play a role in fewer crimes.
Hopefully it has resulted in people being more comfortable reporting problems to the police and letting us know suspicious behavior.
There were 944 thefts in Superior last year, down 11% from the year before. Aggravated and simple assaults were also down by roughly 25% to 30%. Democratic candidate for governor Tony Evers says he's open to raising a variety of taxes, including on personal income and gasoline, as part of his agenda to lower the tax burden for working families and fixing roads. Evers says his goal is to reduce the tax burden on middle-class families and the poor while having the wealthy pay more. His comments in a Thursday news conference came on the heels of a new campaign ad from Governor Scott Walker and comments from Republican lawmakers saying taxes will go up under Evers. Evers doesn't have a specific plan, but says, quote, "It will be our goal to keep taxes reasonable." Evers says his education budget that raises state aid for schools by 10% would not increase property taxes. The Dane County Medical Examiner's Office says 43-year-old Anthony Tong died from firearm-related trauma in Wednesday's shooting at WTS Paradigm in Middleton. The medical examiner says an autopsy was conducted Thursday and that additional testing is underway. Authorities say Tong seriously wounded three co-workers during the attack and that a fourth person suffered a graze wound. Police say the gunman was fatally shot by responding officers. The investigation involves Middleton Police, the State Division of Criminal Investigation, and the Dane County Medical Examiner's Office. Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin says she supports pausing Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's nomination process while the FBI investigates 30-year-old allegations of sexual assault. Sean Johnson has more.
Christine Blasey Ford alleged that when she and Kavanaugh were in high school, he sexually assaulted her at a party. Kavanaugh has denied the allegations. The Senate Judiciary Committee has scheduled a hearing for next week and invited both Kavanaugh and Ford to testify. Ford's lawyers want the FBI to investigate her claim first. Baldwin told reporters in Madison she supports that.
I think that Dr. Ford has brought forth credible allegations, and I agree that it is appropriate to reopen the background investigation of Brett Kavanaugh.
Baldwin's Republican opponent, State Senator Leah Vukmir, called the allegations serious, but said she wanted to hear from both Kavanaugh and Ford. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And that's some of the news of the week, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You can also find us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.